Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Save big money on your roofing project at Menards with Owens Corning Shingles. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements and enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning Duration Shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 24 colors of Owens Corning Duration Shingles and transform your home today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello again, fellow basement dwellers. This is your good friend Patrick O'Dowd welcoming you in to another edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Bandwagon Nerds is, of course, brought to you as a part of thechairshot.com here on the Chairshot Radio Network, where we remind you to always use your head off to a great start. Messed up my own intro. I failed as a podcaster. I'm the worst. Now, I know you guys, I appreciate my co-hosts, by the way. Both of them are like, yeah, it's fine. But it bothered me. That's right. I said both of my co-hosts. I ran Ray off the program apparently last week in our argument over Peacemaker and timelines. Which, full disclosure, Dave can back this up. I was really thinking through the Peacemaker timeline this week at one point, trying to put some things together because I'm still forgiving of Rick Flagg Sr. When you consider that the overall DC universe is 6 months and. In that time, where did he actually learn who was responsible of Rick Flagg Jr.'s death? The question is still out there. I am, as I just mentioned, joined by my good friend, the lawyer himself, co-host to the stars, David Ungar. How are you?
I am good, sir. Glad to be here with you fellows here on this edition of Bandwagon Nerds. And yeah, I have a feeling we're going to talk about Rick Flagg Sr. a little bit here today.
A little bit. We are going to talk about him a little bit. Another short episode of Peacemaker, though, which I thought was really 35 minutes of actual episode time, which was interesting. But before we can get to all that, we do have to bring in our other co-host, the stalwart, the man who may not be here next week based on the trailer park for next week. I don't, the streak could be broken. Mr. Saturday Night himself, the executive vice president of Wednesday night programming here on the Chairshot Radio Network, and our good friend PC Tunney. Could the streak be in jeopardy?
I think that the trailer is something that will threaten the streak. I don't think that the show will end up causing the streak to be broken, but I am just not looking forward to, a different Becky. Let's just put it
that. Different Becky. Interesting way to put it. I personally am not bothered by it, but that's me. And that's fine. I get you. I get those who are. I do think this is an experiment in danger, but we'll talk about that next week. So, folks, good on you if you watched the minute and a half trailer that dropped at from when Dave shared it at 10 o'clock Saturday night, when I was nowhere near the interwebs by that point. And as Tunney pointed out, I'm a man, I'm 40. I don't bow to the whims of the, and I just didn't feel like covering the trailer. Because it's not even a trailer, really. It's a trailer of nothing. It's Liam Hemsworth footage. There, we have covered the Witcher footage that we shared last night. We're recording this, of course, on a Sunday.
I'm sure the kids are out there, you know, the podcasting experts, and what the kids are going to be saying is that this is the Timu version of Witcher, right? That's what they're going to say about him.
I don't know, guys. I want to see more than a fight with a wraith. You know, that's what I want to see. I want to see more than a fight with a wraith, and we'll see that eventually. Because it's basically, I guess we won't cover this next week. We'll cover this week now before we go to Peacemaker, since we've already, that's how we've opened the show. Yes, Netflix dropped about a minute and a half snippet from the upcoming season 4 of The Witcher, now starring Liam Hemsworth in the title role of Geralt. He looked like Geralt, just not Henry Cavill. I will say this, you know, maybe he took the role because he was less injury prone than one Henry Cavill. But we'll get to that later, too. I don't know. Maybe the Cavill leaving because of the creative differences thing was all front. Maybe he tore a hammy. I don't know. But I don't know. It wasn't you got your Netflix special effects. You had him in his gear. He barely spoke. He does not have that deep, gravelly voice that I think gave Dave hard nipples whenever he watched the show. I'm guessing. But I don't know. I think the show is going to go from being good and fun to watch to fun.
True.
I knew it.
I mean, I'll say he was doing Witcher-y sort of things, right? I mean, that's really the best thing you could say about the trailer. He's doing Witcher sorts of stuff, and that's all fine. Did his look like the Geralt I know and love? Probably not, but that's okay. I was surprised with the release date. That's coming awfully quick, October 30th. I mean, that's a month and a half away. That's sooner than I thought, and I'm fine. As my big thing lately, and I said this on Unidentified History as well, is the dangers of prejudging anything. And so I'm not going to prejudge this. It's not overly exciting so far, but we'll see, right? We'll see what they do with this.
I am prejudging the hell out of this. I don't want to watch it. I don't want us to watch it. I don't want either of you to have to watch it. I don't think America should be beholden to this stupid switcheroo. You have a guy who's one of the most iconic character actors, and he played this role excellent. Not to mention that the past couple seasons, it's been falling in the wrong, you can only fall one way, I suppose. It hasn't been rising, but especially this past season. The first season was so fucking good. And then it's just and now you're going to give me.
But
in Dave's
words, season 2 and season 3, Tony.
Timu Geralt. I'd be completely fine if this was Geralt's cousin.
He's already doing it, Pat. Timu Geralt.
I'd be fine if this was a different can be a different Witcher. Can it be a different Witcher?
It could be. I'm sure. I understand your feelings because you have been very clear about how you felt about season 2 and season 3. I liked season 2 and season 3. I enjoyed them. So I guess I disagree with you there. I want to watch this. You're like, all I'm right. being forced
will,
to. I'm choosing to do so.
I will think about Yennefer's yams to settle myself down.
If that's what you need to do to get yourself zen, while you do that, let's go into another show that you don't have great feelings about this season. You're a little more you're a little more waffly. I feel like I'm the only one who's digging what's happening in season 2 of Peacemaker.
I'm there. Yeah. I'm with you.
I'm enjoying this very, very much. I think others are enjoying it less. I do have my first official James Gunn. No, this is actually my second James Gunn complaint with regards to the DCU. My first one, I still am salty about the opening credits to Creature Commandos, where James Gunn is folding his arms behind his head and being like, look at me, I'm your comic book god. And everybody salivating over that. Every major director does this. So when I say this, I'm singling out James Gunn in this case. But I recognize that there are plenty of other directors and filmmakers that do this. I'm tired of seeing James Gunn actors in James Gunn productions. And by that, I mean, in every James Gunn feature, you can kind of count on an appearance by certain people always. And one of them is Michael Rooker, who plays the weird eagle guy. Yeah, obviously, James always casts Sean. He almost always casts Nathan Fillion in some way, shape, or form. And for the first time in a while, and I love Nathan Fillion, and I love that all these people that have been with James Gunn through various movies and projects throughout time are getting roles. And I do want to say that, like, that is great. Nathan Fillion is a very perfectly fine Guy Gardner. But this was the first time where I was watching a DC production and I couldn't get out of my head Michael Rooker, Mr. James Gunn casting. Again, the character was entertaining. I don't want to say it wasn't entertaining, still is entertaining, but it pulled me out of the show a little bit, which is weird. And I understand, and you know, people are going to be fine with it. And again, I want to reiterate, plenty of other directors do what I'm complaining about James Gunn doing, but Nathan Fillion, not so much. This one really pulled me out.
I don't know. I mean, I dug the episode. Michael Rooker's character is like, I'm like, man, Yondu gone wrong or something like that in this whole episode.
But he's not gone wrong. I will say the interesting thing is you spend most of this episode being like, this guy's a dummy. And then it turns out he's not a dummy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's not full of shit.
He's not. And he's obviously got some sort of metahuman abilities to him because
his third eye's open now.
Yeah, his third eye's open. He gets to fly and track eagles, and he's like, I got you, and all this stuff. Economos is going through it in this episode, isn't he? I mean, just in every way possible. And just the stall job to open the dimensional door as...
Right. He's really bad at it.
Yeah, he is. What about the beginning, you know, of the episode where they kill... I'm guessing it's some alien interdimensional being or something like that, and that's where they get this... the helmet that actually opens the interdimensional, garage, you know, the interdimensional way station. That was kind of interesting and adds a whole new element to things. It's like, oh, okay, so this is where they got this from. And with this helmet, you can actually turn this interdimensional, whatever it is, into a portable pocket dimension. It's a pocket dimension. And with this helmet, you can just transfer it to different locations.
I don't think it was a helmet. It wasn't a helmet. It was just a device. Like
I don't know what it was.
It was shaped kind of like a helmet, but nobody wore it.
Yeah. More of an intergalactic carry bag, if you will.
Right. I kind of looked at it as more of like a handbag.
This is a fun episode. I mean, this is good, right? I'm not really down on it like Ray is. I just don't think it's as good as last year, but I'm enjoying it. I think the story is pretty solid. I'm interested to see where they go from the end of this episode. I've been enjoying the shorter episodes as well.
Right.
Man, Tim Meadows and Economos just going back and forth is some of the funniest stuff. You know, Ginger Cool back there and everything else.
Did you have a Midwest moment like me when he was talking about why people in the Midwest wink and then we're all in this together?
Yeah, yeah.
And I also have to say I'm jealous of, I don't know the woman, what her the actress's name is, but I'm always jealous of people who can do that really cool, like the slow one-eye blink wink thing, because like I gotta squint up when I wink. She was like straight dead on, just, you know, left eye closes. It was a little hot, I'm not gonna lie. It was sexy.
It was,
and she was like, exactly. We're in this together. I was like, yes, we are indeed.
We can be.
I can be in this with you. What a couple of things. Did anybody else notice or catch on that this door leads to 99 other doors, which tells you that there's only 100 other dimensions that this little way station seems to go to, based on what Chris said? I thought that was important. This is not infinite. Here's the other thing that I think is going to happen, because we're going back to this other dimension. The whole reason Chris wants to meet up with Harcourt is he's taken one last shot, like to see whether or not there's ever going to be anything between the two of them. And even if there wasn't a trap being laid for him.
Well, that's in the regular dimension, isn't it?
No, it's in both. Like, he's like, there's something I need to know. And that's why he asked her to meet up with him at that park, is I think he's going there to be like, do we have a shot here in this dimension? Because if she says no, he's going to go back. He would go back to that other dimension to try to live the life.
I misunderstood what you were saying. Yeah. I get what you're... I agree.
And what's going to happen is he's going to show up and the trap's going to get sprung. And he's going to see that as a huge betrayal out of this Harcourt. And that's what's going to drive him into the other dimension to try his luck. That seems to be where the story is going there. Now, I could be wrong. And you can tell Harcourt is conflicted about this. She hates this, but she's so desperate to get back into the good graces of the government that she is going along with this decision. She and Economos, honestly, are running very similar paths in that they are trying to continue to be a part of something that doesn't really want them.
Are they, though? Because Economos is in it. Economos is in it, but at the same time using that to warn his friend about things, while Harcourt is not in it, trying to get back into it. And from everything that we have seen from the end of this episode, is clearly willing to throw Chris under the bus to get her job back, which she probably won't anyway.
I think she's conflicted about it. What I'm saying is that both of them, when I say they're on a similar track, it is this concept because he wants, like, Economos clearly wants this job, even though he hates it. Like, it's like the self-preservation part. The thing is that he cares about his friend enough that he's trying to do everything he can to keep his job and at the same time not do his job. It's an interesting conflict where I agree with you, Tony. 100%. I think Harcourt is just so desperate because her identity, and we talk about this, there's so many people that are like this. Her identity is wrapped up in her job, and who she is and what is meaningful to her seems to be very much a part of her job. And she's too proud to admit that she can have a life away from Argus or the government. And she keeps denying her feelings for Chris.
I think you got to see the side of Rick Flagg in this, Rick Flagg Sr., that, you know, I know Ray is critical of why he didn't just go and break down the door and kill Chris right away. Because you get to see here in this episode, he's got a plan. You know, and it's not just he's a lot more calculating than I think anybody gives him credit for. And he's, you know, he's going to get everything he needs out of Chris before he offs him, that sort of thing.
Well,
so
I also just think, and this is where I, you know, and I don't know that I articulated this very well, is I just think that the problem is bigger than his grudge with Chris and that he's smart enough to know that. And I think it does a disservice to Rick Flagg Sr. to pretend like he's so hell-bent on revenge that he's stupid about doing his job. And that's why I was really looking at the timeline. And, you know, and I asked Dave, I was like, what's actually been said? What's actually been seen? I almost rewatched James Gunn's Suicide Squad movie, just to see what's still there or not there. And I may still do it because I'm trying to find the moment where Rick Flagg Sr. like finds it. And, come on, Tony, you know how we argue.
Just ask Grock. Why don't waste your time watching that movie?
I like to do my own research. That's all.
That felt like a backhanded kind of jab.
What? Bro, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
I take it as a compliment because it's an
I'm not the number one chair shot villain for any reason. But
it's a research tool, you son of a bitch.
Grock is a tool, all right. So, and the most that I could find is that the span of time that we are working with here from, like, the end of Peacemaker to Peacemaker 2 is about a six-month window. And even within that, there's some continuity questions as to when Creature Commandos is going on with relation to when Amanda Waller is exposed and falls from grace. Because if you do it in order with Peacemaker Season 1, Creature Commando, Superman, Peacemaker 2, everything I find seems to have it within this 6 months window. But Amanda Waller is still clearly in charge when she's ordering Rick Flagg Sr. around in Creature Commandos, but then falls out of power somewhere in between that. So even if you're looking at that 6 month window, there's also a period that makes it less than 6 months before Rick Flagg took over and had access to what he had. So, and then Superman happens. So it's tough. And that's why I've been trying to find not because I want to continue to rile Ray up. And I do mean that sincerely. Like, I'm not trying to rile, you know, anybody up. I am absolutely trying to make sense of a timeline to see how it all fits together. Dave, I'm going to ask you because not because I don't trust you, but I don't think you've read these comics. Oh, that's weird. You froze. Your hair flip froze you. Like, you were frozen in hair flip.
Long time since I was actually able to do a hair flip.
I know. What a time. All of us, I think, at this point. But Dave, I posted a meme and I was half joking. But what if this meme that is speculating that Chris is going to Earth X when he's going to these alternate realities is true? And for those who don't know, maybe explain what happened in Earth X that would lead somebody to speculate this.
I don't even remember. I'll let
Earth
you
X
explain.
Is, Earth X is a
Which
world
is
where
Earth
X is the one where the Nazis won. And so the meme that I...
Was that
the meme
Red
that
Sun?
I, no, that's the
no,
communists.
No.
This is Germany won World War II. And basically this meme starts talking about all the things they've noticed in this alternate dimension that, you know, Chris's white supremacist loving dad is still alive. There's no black people around. Like, imagine if this is Earth X that he's going into. And Earth X didn't have the superheroes that we know. It was a very, it's a very interesting sort of timeline to read. And I think your response when I posted that meme was watch Ray's head explode, which I don't know why we pick on Ray so much on this one. Like, I know he reads comics and knows what we're talking about, but, and maybe it's just because Ray, the alternate realities thing is, he feels has been a little too fast. And so introducing Earth X seems like it might be a bridge too far, but oh boy.
Well, I mean, like you said earlier, we know there's 100 dimensions in this, whatever this hall of dimensions is. So, you know, Earth X is one of them. So there's no doubt about that. And what else is in there? What's up, Tony?
What do you think the odds are that it is, though? What percentage would you give it? I say there's no chance that it's that. Because
that
I think that'd be
there?
No, that this is where they are right now. I don't think that it's actually Earth X.
No, I don't think it's Earth X. I think, you know, is it in that dimensional, you know, corridor? Sure. Absolutely. Do we get to see it? I don't know. I think, you know, it'd be kind of cool, like, if we get... I forget which movie it was. Was it Multiverse of Madness, right? Where him and America Chavez get to see all the different dimensions that they go through, right? I would not be opposed to seeing a moment like that where you get to see all these different sort of dimensions just kind of like fade in and out as he's trying to find, you know, whatever the hell he's trying to find sort of thing. But I can't imagine we end up with that sort of situation.
He get lost in there and just keep opening doors to see if he could find it, and you get this peek into all these different dimensions.
I mean,
while he's looking for the door
when
again.
When that is done well, like it was in Multiverse of Madness, like it was in Deadpool and Wolverine with all the different Wolverines and stuff like that, it can be a very effective tool. It can be a lot of fun if it's done right. So Earth X, I mean, it does, you know, you look at redneck white supremacist dad at the beginning of this episode. And, you know, he would fit in like a charter member over there. He would be the charter member over in Earth X.
Yeah, he saw that alien and he didn't think twice. He blew that thing's fucking head off. Like, he yes. was not just a reminder of the world that Chris grew up in.
Yeah, Chris is like trying to stop him and he gets backhanded across the face for daring
right,
to speak
right.
up.
Exactly. So,
yeah.
Very, very interesting thing. Here, I think that next week's episode ends with Chris going back into that dimension with Adebayo trying to stop him. And then, if I remember correctly in one of the trailers, the rest of Chris's friends at some point are like, we need to go back and grab him. We need to get him back. And that's, you know, kind of the impetus into this finale, which, as James Gunn likes to tease, is a prequel for Man of Tomorrow, which, by the way, we're going to talk about that a little bit later in this episode. I didn't do a full rundown talk. We got some fun news around the nerdosphere. We're going to go into PC Tunney's wheelhouse a little bit later when we talk some SNL, some good stuff. We're going to talk about Dave's boyfriend, Henry Cavill, just some fun things. So, all right. I think next week is a trying to talk Chris out of going into the portal, and it will be Chris going into the portal broken and hurt by the betrayal of Harcourt. So stay tuned for that. We're now going to make our way to a fun place, a little place known as the Trailer Park, a place where we now only have one song that can be played.
Till Tutty sends me the files for the other ones, but...
Only one song can be played at this point. Tutty will get you the songs. It'll happen. But Dave...
One ring to rule them all.
Dave, I leave it to you to bring said ring / beautiful banjo forward. All right, everyone, welcome to the Trailer Park. We have a fun, eclectic little group of trailers today. One of them, not necessarily a trailer, more like a film announcement, but we're going to talk about it as it is. We're going to start with the accidental trailer, the trailer Patrick O'Dowd just walked into one day and was like, you know what? I'm going to make Dave and Tunney and Ray, miss you, Ray, watch it because I feel like it. And that's the film Dust Bunny, starring Mads Mikkelsen and Sigourney Weaver. And I love a good fantastical story. I do. I'm a sucker for it every single time. And the description of this film is an 8-year-old girl asks her scheming neighbor for help in killing the monster under her bed that she thinks ate her family. What a description. And the heart and soul of this trailer is really a lot of time spent with Mads Mikkelsen's character, who is clearly either an assassin or he's a very violent man. He's a dangerous man, kind of taking this young girl under his wing, trying to help her, but not believing her. Sigourney Weaver plays some sort of role. I'm not sure what that role, like where she fits in this whole thing, but a lot of the footage is of her talking to Mikkelsen's character, talking about this child believes in you, you know, you should believe her. And we see that there are a lot of interesting fantastical elements. There are gun shoes involved at one point, like literally shoes that are guns. It's stiletto heel guns. And so I don't think you can go wrong there. Color me intrigued. I am officially intrigued by this film, Dust Bunny. It looks like a lot of fun. Do I know that I'll see it in a theater? Not necessarily, but I will be checking this one out at some point, be it in a theater or on streaming. It does seem to lend itself to the type of theater experience that would make me happy. So I'm going to try and make it so, but you never know. Dave, you go first.
Yeah, you shared this earlier in the week, I think.
Yes, very early in the week.
I'd not heard of this one before, but I like the concept about monsters under the bed. Did people, did people see things they shouldn't have seen? We heard that before, Tony. And that sort of thing. And whether there's repercussions or the gatekeepers of what you should know and not know and see and not see coming to perhaps exact revenge or just, get involved in some way. But I love the cast. What's the main guy? Mads Mikkelsen, right? Is that the main guy? Yeah, he's one of my favorites, or emerging into one of my favorites. So I anything he's in, I'm going to be interested in. And I think this...
Have you seen him in the Hannibal Lecter show?
Yes.
Like the Silence of the Lambs series? Very good in that.
Yeah, he's excellent at that. Is this a movie or a series?
It's a movie.
Okay. If I had any extra free time, I'd be checking it out. But it's probably going to be one I have to wait till it hits streaming because got to prioritize these things. But then again, nothing else is coming out in the movie so that I can recall. So maybe it is worth checking out. It looks fun, though, like you said.
Dunny.
I applaud an idea that I really haven't seen done quite like this before. Is it for me? No. I do enjoy a really nice cast, though. This seems well cast. Seems like a lot of good actors and actresses here are put in good places to succeed. So it looks good if you're into whatever this exactly is. But it's not, for me, it's a little too horror-ish. Although, how horror-ish can it be when one of the main stars is a child? I mean... Because it seems like this movie is a little bit more quality than some, we've had horror movies with child stars before. And they're just kind of really slasher, kind of hacker stuff.
Have you seen it, Tony? Have you seen it?
Well, I'm just saying, the majority. Right?
I personally would define this as dark fantasy, if that makes sense. Like dark fantasy. So elements of horror, elements of fantasy sort of merge together, but not necessarily kind of fully. Both feed into either genre. It's sort of its own. So I appreciate one of the things that we talk about all the time is unique ideas, right? Like unique ideas, creative films. And this looks like something that is fresh and that's nice. We don't get as much of that. And I think that I honestly think that we're on the verge of a return to this sooner rather than later, given the consistent failures we're having in failures is the wrong word, but when Hollywood hits a point where the reliable things aren't reliable anymore, they're forced to move in other directions. And I think you're seeing that out of the superhero genre. I think that you're seeing that in a lot of films. And I think that you're seeing certain, there's just the IPs aren't hitting the way they did before. And when that happens, it often leads to a wellspring of creativity. So I'm optimistic that we're going to start seeing more movies like this and maybe more films that really kind of capture our imagination in a new way. All right. We also this week got our first look, or maybe it's our second look. I can't remember which trailer we're on now at this point. In the next Knives Out story, this one, Wake Up Dead Man, a Knives Out story. And the first thing that I noticed and the first thing that comes to my mind is with every one of these Knives Out films, Daniel Craig just goes a little deeper, gets a little more eccentric, gets a little more crazy with that accent, gets a little more silly, but yet it's still wildly entertaining. And the thing that you can always count on these films is a cast. And this one has just as monstrous a cast as previous iterations. This time we've got Glenn Close, Josh Brolin, Mila Kunis, Jeremy Renner, Kerry Washington, Andrew Scott, Josh O'Connor, Daryl McCormick, Thomas Hayden Church, Kaylee Spenny, so many names, so many big-time actors and actresses. This one taking place in a church. Josh Brolin's going to buy it and, you know, not going to turn into dust like Thanos, but his days are numbered. Tunny, I go to you. Your thoughts on the newest Knives Out trailer for Wake Up Dead Man?
I mean, they're on a roll, and it looks like it's not going to be stopping anytime soon. You talk about Daniel Craig, and it looks like he's a little bit more eccentric with his haircut and sunglasses in one of the shots in one of the scenes here in the trailer. I think we see Jeremy Renner's in this one too, right? Did I see him in there? I think that's his first time in a Knives Out movie, so it's always fun to see. Kerry Washington, I thought I saw in there too. I don't know if she's been in a previous one, but it's just such good writing and storytelling from these movies, these Knives Out movies. It's no surprise that you're going to end up with such high quality actors and actresses to play these roles. So it's really hard for them to miss when you have great ideas, great direction, and a great cast. And then especially, like you mentioned, an excellent lead character that's, you know, evolved throughout this entire concept of these movies. So if you're a fan, you're looking forward to it. I have only seen the first one, but at one of these points in time, when I get time, I'll probably catch up on the rest of them. It's so hard these days.
Yeah,
we talk about that all the time. But I can't say enough about how this has turned into a great new movie series. And it's done nothing but great things for cinema, in my opinion.
It's the Agatha Christie of our time. The Agatha Christie films of our time. David Ungar.
I've not seen any of them. I need to. And I'm probably going to. I know.
At least Knives Out. It's so good.
I gotta put that at the top of my priority list. But I'm gonna take your guys' word for it. I mean, Daniel Craig, I do know from seeing trailers from the previous two, that Knives Out and Glass Onion, that yeah, like you guys are saying, his appearance is certainly evolving. As for the other aspects of things, I don't know because I haven't seen this, but I assume, like you guys were saying, there's elements of this that are certainly in a state of flux. But I am going to move Knives Out and Glass Onion to the top of my priority list because I've heard nothing but really, really great things
about these movies. And with Netflix owning the franchise, like, you know, go get it while you can.
Yeah, exactly.
Take advantage. PC Tunney, David Ungar, question for you. Can you go wrong with a Ben Affleck and Matt Damon cop flick?
I heard about this one a while back, actually, and this reminds me of is partially of take away Ethan Hawke's part, but Training Day. Weren't those group of cops doing the same exact thing, like taking the money and stuff like that? Wasn't there a big stash somewhere and they would keep stuff? But
so what Tunney's referring to, though, is the next film on our trailer park, Ben Affleck, Matt Damon reuniting on the screen for the first time in a long time in a film called The Rip. It takes place in Miami. And these cops find a big stash. They seize a big stash of cash, and then it becomes a question of who can you trust? And the answer is no one.
It's always the answer.
The answer is no one.
See Stone Cold Steve Austin. There's your wrestling.
Yeah,
reference.
I think like the stuff at the end of the trailer where the girl asking him, what does, you know, AWTTG mean? Which kind of sums up, are we the good guys? Because you're not really sure, are they the good guys in this? Or are they just all on the take? Is there a good reason they're on the take? That sort of thing. I don't know what you... I think, like, yeah, this... to answer your question, Pat, no. I don't think you can go wrong with a Matt Damon, Ben Affleck join up. I mean, how many times have we seen that? So, go ahead, Tony.
Straight to Netflix, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I believe so.
I'd be willing
and
to.
And they're just acting like they're not, you know, Ben and Matt are producers on the film, but they're not, they didn't write the script. They're not directing. You know, Carnahan's directing. There's a story by credit, sorry, by Michael McGrail. I'm trying to see who actually has writing credits.
While you look at that, I want to say that I'm definitely going to watch this. It's on Netflix, so I've already paid for it. I'd be willing to even make a proposal of maybe we cover it here on the Bandwagon after everybody's seen it.
We might be able to pull that off. When does it hit? Actually, when does it release?
Hold on, Pat. You are not getting out of The Witcher 4 that easily, Tony, so stop it.
I didn't say that this was in place of.
Neither did I. Dave's sees an open wound and he has a salt shaker.
Dave woke up
and chose violence today. Dave chose violence today. That's fine. You know what, Patrick? It's okay.
You know what?
I don't even have to talk about Thursday night. I'm okay with it. It's fine. I'm the winner now.
You are for now. Yes.
We did what every good sports podcast does, by the way. We did a overreaction question after 2 weeks of football where you ask, are the Green Bay Packers the best team in the NFL? Because it's always fun to do. And it always makes fans of said teams uncomfortable when you laud them or ask that question 2 weeks into a season. They're a very, very good football team.
Funner question is this the greatest 5 days to open an NFL season in history of the NFL?
No. But it's great for you.
Yeah, I don't know that anybody's true. Ever. Okay, the wrong show. I should have showed up today. Never mind.
Tony, ask Patrick how his Monday went last Monday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, greatest fucking NFL opening season ever.
Well, maybe, you know what? If you didn't scare off Ray last week, you and him could have, you know, shared in some sorrow.
I'm starting to wonder if Ray's just, like, traumatized by the end of that
this
game.
Edition
so
of the, this Monday edition of the Four Quarters.
I can tell you that Ray not being here today had nothing to do with football or you guys. He had a really busy weekend because him and I were going to do something else that he couldn't make it to. So that's all that's going on.
Yeah, no, I shared. I think I told you this. I told this today when we recorded Four Corners. I congratulated Ray and went to bed when they went up 19. I sent like a gif. I didn't like congratulate him, but like I sent him a gif of like Derrick Henry. It was like Derrick Henry running through the Bills. Yeah, like they go up 40-25. I'm like, okay, this game looks done. I'm out. And I woke up to your message to me about the game. And I'm like, oh shit, they lost? Like, I was like, I had no idea.
Actually messaged Ray later that morning, making sure he was okay. He's like, yeah, rough day, man.
Yeah, dude, I messaged him too. But anyway, you know what helps make a day better? Relaxing in a beautiful open field in the Mushroom Kingdom. And, you know, the birds are chirping, the fish are flying around, you're under a shade tree and a butterfly flies by. And that's when you learn that maybe the Mushroom Kingdom isn't the limits of your world and exploration. Perhaps you're going to check out a galaxy. And that's what Nintendo shared with us earlier this past week when we got an official announcement that the sequel to the Super Mario Brothers movie would be Super Mario Galaxy. Now, this was not a trailer, but it's in the trailer park because they did present a video of Mario sleeping in said Mushroom Kingdom relaxing as a butterfly flew all around the Mushroom Kingdom before flying up into the sky and towards space. I never played Super Mario Galaxy. I've seen footage of it, the first three-dimensional Mario game, if I'm not mistaken, or is that Super Mario 3D?
Super Mario 64 was the first three-dimensional
right,
Mario
but Galaxy
game.
Galaxy was one of the earlier three-dimensional Mario games.
It was like, they call like the DP was here. He would either correct me or agree with me. Like the killer app on the Wii was Super Mario Galaxy for, if I remember right, Tony, that was the first big Super Mario game on the Wii.
So
yeah,
I don't know any context about this. And you know, the first Super Mario movie just kind of was what it was. It was this fun adventure romp that caught lightning in a bottle with the Peaches song and Jack Black being Bowser. And my kid loved it, had a wonderful time watching that film. So I'm sure we're going to see Super Mario Galaxy at some point, unless his Mario love has gone away. Thoughts? I mean, we knew we were going to get a sequel. Really not much to say beyond that, unless you have some passion or love for the video game. I never played it, so I can't speak to it. So either of you can go. Feel free to take charge here.
I mean, Super Mario Galaxy, the original and the second one, were one of, you know, top five Super Mario games of all time, I would say. You know, that's not hyperbole. You're talking about one of the most beloved and one of the best franchises of all time. And those two games are really high up there. So I think from the standpoint of what the story was, as much as I remember it, it's been a long time since I played it. We're talking about the Wii, which was a few generations ago. But yeah, story-wise, it makes sense to do something based on this. There's a lot of ground that they can till there to do this story as a spiritual and just a natural follow-up to the original Super Mario Brothers movie. So yeah, I mean, when you look at Mario games and like which ones would translate into stories that would be compelling, yeah, I'd say Galaxy's right up there. You know, other, you know, Paper Mario or something like that might be the other one. But that's, yeah, that one, I don't know if you transfer that over to the big screen so easy. But this one's got a lot of things that they can do with Super Mario Galaxy to make this, that transition to the big screen as seamless as possible. So I'm in favor of it. I like the idea.
Dave, the other huge idea that's sitting out there is Mario Kart.
Yes.
Like just a,
you look
like
at
a total.
Look at the success of F1 and think, what could we do with a Super Mario Kart movie? I mean, it would basically be a merging of F1 and Twisted Metal, right? Because you'd have the same, all these concepts and these wild things going on. And you know, I mean, you could do, I love the idea, Tony. I absolutely love the idea.
It's almost, it's like, it is. It's that Mario world in like a series too, because all the famous tracks, right? It ends, what's the, here, say it with me, Dave. Where's the last race of the season? 1, 2, 3, it's at Rainbow Road, right?
Yeah, right. You know, and if you're going to do this whole Nintendo-verse, you want those crossovers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Mario Kart's the one that stands out. The other one, Smash Brothers.
Smash Brothers, I mean, Mario All-Stars, Mario Party.
Yep.
Just waiting for the Zelda movie, so we'll get
it. It's coming.
It's coming.
We got castings. We got all that. What we also got is a commercial break. So, folks, we're going to take our quick commercial break and then jump into some news around the nerdosphere. We got to check on Dave, make sure he's doing okay, because he got some bad news today. Our bad news this week. His lover is... stay tuned for that when we come back. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Welcome back, everyone, to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. Patrick O'Dowd, PC Tunney, David Ungar here, talking all kinds of nerdy stuff. And if you love what we do, head over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot to get your sweet, sweet Chairshot swag. Maybe somebody should gift Dave a shirt, because Dave, Henry Cavill is hurt. Henry Cavill injured himself prepping for the Highlander movie. We were going to get a Highlander reboot, supposed to start filming this year.
You know what happened?
He broke himself. I hope he didn't break any of the good bits.
Injury.
Like, I don't want to, for your sake, I hope he didn't break the good bits. Because if he broke the good bits, what are you going to do? This is according to Entertainment Weekly. Henry Cavill has been injured during pre-production, delaying the start of filming. Production is likely to resume in 2026, with the extent of Cavill's injuries unknown. He broke his penis, didn't he, guys?
And Superman break his penis?
I don't
penis?
Know if I thought that. I mean, he could.
It's not Superman.
But
I thought it was infallible.
It's definitely not inflatable.
As long as they don't bring in Liam Hemsworth,
that'd
Timo Geralt that he is, to a Timu Highlander.
Like, I'm drowning. But no, he's okay. I can see his penis. It's rising to the surface. It's
Swedish penis pump.
There's your drop for the week for Bandwagon Nerds, the part where they talked about Superman's inflatable penis.
I can't imagine what Rupert's going to do with it. Yeah. Whatever. I mean, it's like Tony said, there can be only one. It could be only one injury. That's fine. I mean, it's unfortunate he got hurt, but I'm sure it's going to be
okay.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's nothing alarming. I'm sure it's him training in swordplay. You know, swordplay.
Yeah.
For whatever.
Ooh,
that's fine. I don't know where I am today.
A lot of sexual innuendo in this episode.
In your endo. Just keep it coming.
On the next edition of Unidentified History.
On the next edition of Uranus.
Uranus, yes. You got where I was going.
Yeah, I just am bummed because this just adds to 2027, right? Because if they're not going to start filming until 2026, that now means we get a Highlander reboot along with a plethora of other films that we have coming out in, what is it?
#2027.
We also got some Man of Tomorrow news, speaking of Superman, this week, which I think was, the speculation was already out there, right? But this week, James Gunn, you know, he did an interview, because that's usually how this goes. And it was announced, first of all, the filming is going to start for Man of Tomorrow in April 2026. James Gunn, though, he appeared on Howard Stern's radio show on SiriusXM, and he was talking about the film and what's coming up. And he's been very cagey about necessarily calling it a Superman sequel. What he did say is that it's going to take place approximately 2 years after the release of Superman, but that it's a story about Lex Luthor and Superman having to work together to a certain degree against a much, much bigger threat.
You know what, Patrick? I hate to cut you off, but you know what? That sounds like a Superman sequel.
He's not calling it a Superman sequel.
Well,
He's calling it a Lex Luthor / Superman sequel. He is being very intentional about the role of Lex Luthor in his DC cinematic universe. I don't think it's an accident at all. And I think that I actually appreciate it when you consider how mammoth of a role that character has in comic book lore. Right, Dave? Like, I mean, Lex Luthor permeates the DC universe. He just does. And when this announcement came out, instantly the internet went to one villain. Dave, care to illuminate everybody on which villain that the internet immediately speculated to?
It's got to go to Brainiac. Wait. You know what?
It's not funny when I do it.
That was the fist.
I see.
That was the fist.
Mephisto.
Mephisto. Sorry.
Brainiac's the one that immediately jumps to mind as you said, Pat, as everybody on the internet has been saying that a existential threat that could unite Superman and Lex Luthor. And they kind of spread some breadcrumbs for this in the original movie, in the one that, well, I'd say original, but Superman, where the interchange with Superman and Lex, where he's trying to explain to Lex why he's human, his humanity, why he does what he does, and saying, and I pray for the sake of the world, Lex, that someday you get that. And there you go. Here's your someday coming up right now. So I think, yeah, Brainiac's a very likely candidate as far as these massive threat that's going to require this team up. So I Man of Tomorrow, if it's done well, is a really good story. I have a lot of faith in James Gunn to pull this off. He's got these two actors who clearly had chemistry with each other in Superman. So I think that this will go a long way towards really solidifying the DCU. And I think you guys see Gunn's comments about Miley Alcock, or how you ever pronounce it. Did I pronounce it right?
Millie Alcock.
Yeah. I got that all wrong. But he's like so high on the casting of her as Supergirl.
Like, yeah. He said it's like the best casting he's ever done.
Yeah.
Outside of Michael Rooker. Sorry.
Patrick.
When you think about who he's cast though, and for him to, you know, go there, that's a big testament to just how high he thinks of her as far as Supergirl goes. I think I love it. I think Man of Tomorrow, give me all the Superman. Give me all the stuff that's going on. I know Batman will come into play and it'll all, you know, make sense at some point in time, and that's fine. But right now, I think he's doing some good stuff with where he's going with this universe, and this is going to be another really good example of that. I'm sorry, Tony. Grant Gustin has not been announced yet. It's probably going to happen.
maybe.
We'll see. I'm not going to hold my breath. But you're absolutely right. The casting of Supergirl, like, I'm looking forward to this movie. You know, her character growth is going to be something to really watch for, because we've already seen she's this irresponsible teenager that's needs to learn some discipline and, you know, how to feel some responsibility for the power she's been given. And we can clearly see that she's lacking some discipline because of the dog, right? But at the same time, you can see that, you know, she's very powerful. She's very attractive. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that relationship works and where her growth comes from. Obviously, accentuating the Lex Luthor and Superman relationship, it's probably, you know, it's your 1A and 1B hero and villain relationship next to Batman and Joker within the DC. You need to get that right, and there's no reason not to have that layered like a gigantic fucking onion, right? Because when you start pulling those layers away, the flavor makes you happy, and the aromas that come from it will make you cry sometimes, right? Just like an onion. You're welcome. Thank you. That was a good onion reference, Dave. Don't shake your head.
Ogres don't have layers, Tutty. Like onions, they don't have
ogres
layers.
Damn it, donkey.
This, you know, I often make jokes about where this show goes when I'm not on the show, and yet here we are today. We are in rare form. This has been rare
form
today. You're
going to have to change your name to Chair Shot Facilitator at this rate.
I am an enabler. That's what I figured out here. It's been a great show, and it's going to continue to be great, because we're actually going to go to our resident Saturday Night Live expert, PC Tunney. Because we're going to talk about an interesting... So, a couple of episodes ago, and I wasn't here for this. This was one of the episodes where I was gone. You guys talked a little bit about Lorne Michaels, who had come forward, and it had been announced that after the 50th anniversary season of Saturday Night Live, that casting changes were afoot. And then several prominent cast members who had been on for several seasons were either not brought back or chose to leave the show. You know, we talked about... I know that there was talk about, like, what happens when Lorne Michaels hangs it up as a producer of Saturday Night Live, whether that be via retirement or passing. But we did get this week SNL revealing its season 51 cast. It's full cast until it wasn't its full cast. And I think it's funny because I have this Variety article, and then I have a second Variety article right after it, because the first one is like, it's finalized its season 51 cast. And Bowen Yang, Hugo Nwodim, and Chloe Feinbaum, I'm thinking of SEC Network stuff, Feynman, will all return. And then the very next article that I share announces that Ego has chosen to leave the production. Now, Kenan Thompson will be back. He's been on for 23 seasons. Colin Jost and Michael Che are returning. So there are some familiar names. There's some new names. Tunney, I guess, one, with the departure of Ego, it brings us to no black women on the cast. Been many times there's only been one black woman on the cast at any given point. Very rarely has it been more than one. You know, I think a lot of people remember when Leslie Jones was on the cast. Oddly enough for me, the black woman that I most remember from Saturday Night Live cast is Ellen Claiborne back in the early 90s. She played a lot of fun characters, and I enjoyed her on the show. And then I stopped watching Saturday Night Live. So I'm going to start with you to just react to this cast, because I know a lot of new names got up. I think there was a sketch comedy show that is now no more because SNL hired one of the people from that cast. And so your thoughts on this new cast and the departure?
They let go of my ego.
Am I pronouncing your name wrong?
I was just making a... It is ego. It's ego.
Okay,
warm.
Yeah, I was pronouncing your...
No, it's ego. Yeah. Yeah, they let go of my ego. No, breakfast, waffles?
Nobody? No, I got you.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. Good. No, sold it. Good villain. Sorry, I had to there. The funny thing is, as you mentioned, it's the women, right? Because Heidi Gardner is gone as well. Like, you only have four women on the entire cast. And Veronica Slowakowska is brand new, and she's going to have to take over a big role, because from everything I remember from last year, Sarah Sherman and Ashley Padilla didn't do a lot. Now, luckily, they still have Chloe Feynman. And I'll give you some insight on what you can expect from Chloe Feynman as the seasoned veteran woman on the show. She's amazing at impressions. In fact, go to YouTube and look at Chloe Fineman impressions. There's one where she's on a late night show. I forget which one. And she does four or five in a row of some of the most famous women in the world. And they're so fucking good. Change is good on Saturday Night Live. A lot of people leave and they go on and they do much better things. I think if you look at the men's side of things, and if you've watched a Happy Gilmore, Marcelo Hernandez is just waiting to destroy the world. And then you bring in a guy like Cam Patterson from Kill Tony, which I've been promoting all over Chairshot Radio Network shows for years. If you haven't ever checked it out on YouTube, it's free. YouTube channel, Kill Tony Show. It's every Monday night. A couple episodes ago, Donnell Rawlings and Rob Schneider were on the show. And rumor has it that either this Monday or next Monday, Triple H will be on that show. So comedy is alive and well. I'm okay with all of this. Saturday Night Live is not going to change that much. Colin Jost and Michael Che are still there, you guys. So I think it's a good thing with change. I'm interested to see how that woman's locker room, if you will, in a sports analogy kind of way, does this year with SNL. But I look for Chloe Fineman to have a gigantic role this year and a lot of her impressions.
Dave, thoughts? I think you're like me and not necessarily watching Saturday Night Live the way we used to.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I was deferring to Tunney and his opinions and his thoughts on this whole thing, because I know he's in Ray or the connoisseurs of SNL. But like you're saying, you know, Colin Jost, Michael Che coming back. So you've still got that anchor for Weekend Update going on. And I think they should be fine for this 51st season. I agree with Tony, change is good, especially on the women's side of things, because they tend to go on and do bigger and better things. And the men, it takes a little bit longer for them to, unless you're Eddie Murphy or somebody like that. But yeah, that's cool. I'm looking forward. Yeah. I'm sure it's going to be another solid season.
Yeah, I agree. The only thing that should be constant in a Saturday Night Live cast is frequent change. Like, there should be some stalwarts. You know, kudos to Kenan Thompson for 20-some years and really being...
23 years or something, yeah.
Yeah, record-setting. I feel like one of my favorite sketches of all time, as we talked about Tim Meadows earlier, is when Michael Myers hosted for the first time and he's singing this song, and Tim Meadows has a whole bit where he sings about why he signed a 30-year contract. It was basically he was singing what Kenan Thompson is now in the future. Back in the 90s. It's a great, great opening bit.
Ray's suggestion last week or the week before was that Kenan Thompson would take over when Lorne Michaels would leave.
And maybe that's what's happening, you know, or maybe
a combination of him and Che and Jost kind of would be a triad to me. Maybe you bring back like one of the women that were so unbelievably successful. There's a bunch of them you could pick from to come back to and
sure.
You know, make sure you have that type of influence. I'm thinking like, golly, who left before Kate McKinnon? What was her name? Taller, redhead, did the Californians. I was in Bridesmaids. God damn it. Continue the show. I'll look up Bridesmaids.
Well, we're going to, you get some time to look it up, because we're going to go into our second and final commercial break, head into the last segment of the show.
Kristen
where, Wade. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I honestly thought that was too obvious, which is why I did not throw her name out there.
I can't believe I couldn't remember her fucking name, but like, she was so amazing. She could nail different types of roles inside of different sketches.
Those are some smart slacks. So, all right, we're going to take our second and final commercial break. When we come back, it's been a while, but Warner Brothers has put themselves back on the bandwagon radar. So find out why when we return. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.org.
8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore. Everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Welcome back, everyone, into this edition of Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com. Patrick O'Dowd, PC Tunney, David Ungar, talking to you all nerd all day. ProWrestlingTees.com/thechairshot. Get those chair shot shirts. Get that swag. Look good. And again, send one to Dave. Dave's hurting right now. He's worried about his boy. He's worried about Henry Cavill.
Make sure you send a Superman shirt to Ray, because I don't think he's going to pay up on this bet unless somebody does that for him.
Oh, is he? He owes you?
Yeah. Superman outgrows Fantastic Four quite a bit. So
yeah,
he's supposed to be sporting a Superman shirt on one of these shows.
And still, you know what? He needs to wear Superman under Ruse. I think you should take a step further. Superman under Ruse. You remember under Ruse, Dunny?
I do. I have Superman boxers.
That counts.
No.
I mean, I'm down.
Make Ray wear them on his head. There you go. That would be even better.
Here's the thing. We don't need to see him stand up because it came with a t-shirt. You just wear the t-shirt.
That's right.
So he can just do one of these and shuffle it. See, like this.
We love you, Ray.
That's all you got to do, Ray. Ray, wear the underoos, Ray. Wear the underoos. Okay. Again, this show has taken a lot of different directions in the hour that we've spent together. It's been a very efficient show, very effective. And now we're gonna do something we haven't done in a while, and that's talk about Warner Brothers and how much they suck. As news dropped this week again, I went to Variety a lot this week with news, and it has come out that Warner Brothers Discovery might be facing an acquisition bid from Paramount/Skydance. And we talked about Paramount, I want to say like a month and a half ago with this merger and some of the things, because we talked about how much they shelled out for South Park, and that's looking like a great idea at this point. We talked about the UFC, how cowardly they were with 60 Minutes and the way that they treated that, and just all of this. And there was like this question about, well, what's up with Paramount Skydance? Are they doing okay? Are they desperate? Well, they must be doing okay if they think they can buy out Warner Brothers Discovery. And now this is very, very early, and their shares did spike with the news coming out this week as they make this bid to do it. And by spike, I mean they went up by as much as 33% on Thursday, according to Variety. And that came from the Wall Street Journal. Their bid will be for Warner Brothers Discovery as it exists currently, despite Warner Brothers Discovery's plans to split into two separate companies next year. The article said that Paramount Skydance bid would be majority cash, but did not specify a price. It is backed by the Ellison family. That's a reference to Larry Ellison, the Oracle founder, who is one of the world's wealthiest individuals with current net worth of $370 billion. He is the father of David Ellison, the chairman and CEO of the new Paramount Skydance. So it's all just going to be one conglomerate by the time it's all done, right? We're just going back to monopolies. That's what's happening here with entertainment. Like, if this happens and this goes through.
Well, we've been saying it's just going to turn back into three or four major companies, because they're all going to have a studio, they're all going to have a streaming, they're all going to have a network that you can get through antenna ears, and they're all going to have subsidiaries on DirecTV and cable or YouTube TV, right? Especially since ESPN leaving the model of cable and satellite is just, it's all over. It's going back to, there's a big four, you're going to pay. The nice thing about it for me is I feel like it's easier to pick and choose what you want now, as opposed to cable. Right. Everybody's like, oh, cable's back. I'm like, no, I couldn't pick and choose really what I wanted there. There were tiers, but not specifically. Here I can specifically do exactly what I want to do. And I'm kind of down with that. No big surprise.
Instead of like you're saying, instead of like navigating through like a DirecTV or Dish TV guide and try to go through 250 channels just to find what the hell you're looking for, now you know I got one of four places I'm going to go, and everything within there I know is going to be in that place. And it's mimicking, like, Pat, we know you talk about college football a lot, and it's just kind of the same sort of format. We're getting these power networks, and look, honestly, the best thing for Warner Brothers Discovery would just be to merge with Paramount, because you clearly cannot run your own affairs. We've seen that how many different times now? So I think Paramount has got, you know, they want to consolidate. They want to be a big player with the Disneys and the Netflixes and the Primes of the world. This would be a big coup for them to get Warner Brothers library and all this stuff. You know, you get franchises like The Last of Us is out there. You get all the DC stuff. You get DC animation.
I just need to know if I need to keep my Paramount Plus subscription or if I need to keep my HBO Max subscription. Like, where's it going to be? Right now, I have my Paramount Plus subscription because of my subscription to 24/7 Sports. So I get all the Illini news, because God knows I can't follow the Bears. That's a dumpster fire in 2 weeks in.
You don't want to follow them today. It's
38-14. I know.
Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Sorry.
Same old Bears. Well, when I got people I follow sending me gifts of tire swings on fire, I'm pretty sure I know what they're talking about. It is what it is. Much like Warner Brothers is a burning tire swing with the way that it's gone. And that ultimately, I think, is why Paramount is making this move, right? Is because of the just shitty way that Zaslav has run Warner Brothers Discovery since he took over. Like, since, and we've talked about David Zaslav so many times on this show, and the weird ass decisions and the poor decisions and the taking away of properties and entertainment, basically chopping up everything that they had and selling it out to the highest bidder. You know, if Paramount takes this over, give me my Looney Tunes back, Paramount. That's all I'm asking. Give me my Looney Tunes back. Give me the shit that made HBO Max fun. Those hubs that made me stand up for HBO Max. And now I'm like, this is crap because there's nothing there anymore. Because right now it's crap. And that is annoying. And so, you know what? Kiss my grits.
That's laugh to me. I'm going to draw a comparison. He's like the Daniel Snyder of streaming. He's just such a piece of shit in
any
every way.
That, David Ungar, I mean, can come like, and rip on Dan Snyder.
That's a rough comparison, right, though, Dave. You got to be careful there, though. Like, business sense wise, yeah, but like, as a person, is he that grimy too?
No.
Because we know. I just say, right. Be careful. Right. Snyder's right. Like, otherwise, that's a tough one. Yeah.
Yeah, right, slime right. ball.
There's been some issues there.
Yeah, there's no indication Zaslav is like that. Yeah, you're
let's
right.
Let's step away from that. And I put this in the rundown because while this is a person, we're gonna do a little happy trails. We're gonna say happy trails to Polly Holiday. Most of you who listen to us are probably too young to know who the show Alice is and knows who Flo is from Alice. But, and she was the one who famously would say, kiss my grits on the show. But I actually remember her in a different way. And the reason why I put this on is because there's this holiday film, a little charming holiday flick, came out in the 80s, took place in a quiet little scenic town known as Kingston Falls. It's a story about a young man who was a bank teller who was just trying to get by. And then all of a sudden, little gremlins showed up and made everybody's Christmas a nightmare. And there was a woman, a very evil woman, by the name of Mrs. Deagle, who I, as a child, hated because she wanted to kill the dog Barney so much. And when her mobility chair gets messed with by the gremlins and throws her out of her own home's window, I'm not going to say I celebrated and laughed. But boy, did I hate Mrs. Deagle. And that's all because of Polly Holiday, who is a longtime character actress and one that she lived a great life, lived to be in her 80s, what any one of us could possibly hope for. I think she lived to be like 88, but also played one heck of an iconic character on a very famous sitcom on CBS back in the day. And I encourage you to check out Alice, the show Alice, and check out Flo and just laugh with her the way we all did when she told somebody to kiss her grits. So that's my happy trails to Polly Holiday. I don't know, Dave, if you got any. You were alive when Alice played. I don't know that you watched Alice, but I know you were alive.
Oh, yeah. I watched Alice quite a bit. Wasn't Vic Tayback, wasn't he in that? The chef in that whole thing, or the guy running the kitchen?
Mel?
If I remember correctly. Mel. Wasn't that Vic Tayback?
I don't know. I'll look it up while you...
I'm going to look it up. But like, it's so funny you said Gremlins, Pat, because that was exactly what I was going to say. It wasn't so much... I mean, Flo was one thing and she was cool, but yeah,
yes,
Mrs. Deagle.
Vic Tayback was Mel Sharpie's.
Yes. But yeah, her role as Mrs. Deagle and just her comeuppance at the end of that was so satisfying. I mean, it really was. I mean, you know, we didn't get enough Phoebe Cates in those days, but this is one of the movies where we did get her, and you got to see her in a role where she didn't take off her bikini top.
She did that in one movie. It's not like she did that like every movie she was in.
I don't know. Did she do that in Paradise? I don't remember.
Good Lord, man.
Hey, that defined many, many young men of my age and ilk. It defined our...
Unlike
childhood.
Now, where it's
there's
Henry
nothing
Henry
wrong
Cavill's
with Lil Zahn our time.
Yeah, exactly. Nah, happy trails to Polly Holiday. Like you said, 80 years old, she lived a good life. I mean, she squeezed all of it out of there. So yeah, happy trails, Polly, and that sucks, but
it does. Tony, any comment on the passing of one Polly Holiday?
No, I'm a little too young for that.
Fair enough. You're not that much.
Yeah, screw you, Tony.
But that's fine. You watch Gremlins, man? I'll find the little.
Tried to like get Gremlins. You to just. I tried to get you to just move past me. And
I know, but
didn't,
then
didn't pay attention.
Least, what? What chair shot villain would I be if I didn't? You know, dig a little.
You at least agree that Gremlins is a Christmas movie, right? You're in that camp?
Absolutely Christmas.
I mean, I would be dying hard if I didn't agree.
It's more of a Christmas movie than Die Hard, but that's fine.
It truly, absolutely is.
Gizmo is a gift, for God's sakes. Anyhow, all right.
Patrick O'Dowd is a gift, damn it.
I am a gift. I'm a gift that occasionally shows up to do podcasts.
Once in a while.
Can't call myself the gift that keeps on giving, because we both know that ain't true. All right, we're heading into the home stretch of this very efficient edition of Bandwagon Nerds. I'm going to go cry in a beer over how bad the Bears are, but we can't do that without talking to the world about what we're watching, and I'm going to hand this over to David Ungar to tell everybody what he's watching first. So, Dave, what you watching?
Main thing I've been watching is Alien Earth, which I continue to sing the praises of. DJ's the same way. Just a phenomenal show.
And I'll get there, I promise. I will get there.
By the time you get there, the whole season will be done. You'll be able to binge it. They have done just a magnificent job with this show. Whoever's picking the closing song for every episode deserves some sort of nomination for something, because it has not missed on any episode so far. It has been tremendous. It is like my wife, she's confided in me. She goes, I'm not sure I should be watching this, because, you know, she doesn't like horror, and it is getting more and more intense as we go along. And there are things that make you feel uneasy that are happening. Yeah, it is by far and away one of the best things that they have done with this franchise. And, you know, and you think about it, this is the precursor to the original Aliens movie. So it's like, okay, well, I wonder how all this stuff sorts out in the end, because it sure seems like it's going off the rails right now. And we got a new star. You know, the xenomorphs are one thing. The eye is stealing the show of this series. And that's all
I
will say about
it. I've seen the pictures of the eye. Tony, what are you watching, buddy?
Dinnertime Live is back with David Chang. Hope you get two new episodes this week and next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, 7 o'clock Eastern. It's live. There's live voting on whatever app or streaming service you're on while they do it. And then another thing on Netflix that I checked out was the first two, the two-part series of the Charlie Sheen, aka Charlie Sheen. So excellent, very entertaining, especially if you grew up like in the 80s, 90s, and kind of know a little bit of the backstory, but a lot of stories just being told and revealed, and a lot of truth coming out. So it was really well done.
Cool. This time of year, it becomes spooky season at the O'Dowd household, which usually means busting out some of the Halloween-esque or horror films as we head into October. The Little O'Dowd and I we did wrap up watching the Alien films that are currently out and released with Alien Romulus, which he absolutely loved, like literally said in the middle of watching it, I love this movie, this is so good. And I thought we were going to start Alien Earth, and then he was like, hey, can we go back to watching Stranger Things? So we are picked back up trying to get ready for the final season of Stranger Things when it hits in November. We're in the midst of season 3, picked up an episode yesterday, going to watch another one today. The other thing I do this time of year, I love watching sports movies around the season that the sport is taking place. So like when baseball starts, I'll go through a big Bull Durham, the Natural, Major League phase. Football season starts, and I love watching ridiculous over-the-top films, and The Program, it fits that bill. That is such a ridiculous over-the-top film.
Are you hurt, or are you injured, Patrick?
Are you hurt, or are you injured? Okay. I'm just hurt. I think I'm just
hurt. Get your ass back out on that field.
Place at the table. Starting defense, place at the table. But the other film that I watched that has actually spurred an idea for a project was I rewatched yesterday on... I think it was on Peacock, was The Replacements, starring the immortal Keanu Reeves and Gene Hackman and a ton of other great actors. Orlando Jones, fun, fun movie.
So you're telling me our best offensive weapon is wiry?
Wiry.
Wiry. Wiry.
And so I'm watching this movie, and while I'm enjoying it, I thought in my head, I'm like, man, this is like one of the most quintessentially these films, from the soundtrack to the jokes to the look. And it led me to be like, there's a project here. And so coming down the line, when we you get in the mood to do another listicle episode, you know, when news around the nerdosphere slows down.
We could skip The Witcher and do this.
We will not skip The Witcher. It'll be there. I appreciate your feedback and suggestion. We might combine the two. They might be on the same episode. Combine episode one show, 1,000 points of light. Anyway, we're going to... I love the delayed reaction by both of you on that catch on. Kids, go watch Dana Carvey pretend to be George Bush. Anyhow, watching that movie made me realize that, hey, wouldn't it be fun to do a Bandwagon Nerds and maybe start in recognition, Dave, I know you're 900 years old. We're going to start in the 80s. We can't go further than the 80s. To do... Yeah.
Wouldn't be prudent. Not good for the shoe.
Not going to do it. This is bad. It's just bad. But what we are going to do... Wait, no. See, you ruined the joke. Like, why would you ruin the joke? Tony got it.
We're doing Dana Carvey.
I know. You did a terrible Dana.
Chubby Bregola.
Anyway, we're going to break down our quintessential movies of a decade. Each of us will have our list of quintessential films from the 80s, 90s, aughts, and 10s. I think is how we'll do that. It could be any genre, and it's not really necessarily about films that are timeless or the greatest of that decade. There are films that scream that decade when you watch it. So the other example I came up with was the film, the teen comedy Can't Hardly Wait. Like, that movie is just oozies from the soundtrack to the film itself. And that's what I really, I'm hoping this will be. You know, some films from decades are timeless and fit no matter what. And when you watch them, don't scream, oh, this is so these 90s, whatever. And so we don't want films like that. These are ones that, whether for better or for worse, are quintessentially the decade they were made in. And I'm really excited about that. The other thing I'm really excited about is that tomorrow, I'm doing two things tomorrow. So everybody knows I'm in Massachusetts. I live near Springfield, Massachusetts, and it just so happens that I'm going to talk about wrestling. Monday Night Raw is taking place in Springfield, Massachusetts. Adam Pearce, even today on socials and talking about what will be on there, talked about Springfield College Hall of Famer John Cena coming back to Springfield for this episode of Monday Night Raw, which is the reason Springfield, Massachusetts, of all places, is getting a Monday Night Raw, because the location where this is taking in, I went and saw an AEW show there a few months ago, maybe about a year ago now. It's not the biggest. It's not the biggest arena. You're gonna see it and probably feel it. I know that the production team, when they do Monday Night Raw, they do a really good job of sort of making places seem bigger than they are, and so you might not notice it. But I'll be watching Monday Night Raw saying goodbye to John Cena. But before I do that, it just so happens that the arena is next to the MGM Springfield, a casino. And within that casino, there is a Regal Cinemas. So I'm going to go check out Spinal Tap 2, The End Continues, before I go to Monday Night Raw. Because doors open at 5, I got the day off tomorrow. There's a showing at 2 in the afternoon. That sounds like a great way to spend the afternoon. Avoid that 5 p.m. rush hour traffic and just walk my way over to the stadium. So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to having a great Monday off and giving you all my full review of Spinal Tap 2 next week as well. Fellas, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Before we get out of here, let's do a quick once around. Tell everybody where they could find you out there in the nerdosphere, on the Chairshot Radio Network, on the socials, all that fun stuff. And since Dave went first with what you're watching, Tunney will go first with how to find him.
Follow me at PC Tunney. Make sure you're checking out everything Chairshot Radio Network on all of your favorite streaming platforms. TheChairShot.com got you covered for all your favorite wrestling brands, and ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot.
David Ungar.
Yeah, you can find me on X and Blue Sky at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG. Facebook.com/Attitude of Aggression and at Attitude of Aggression, all one word, on Instagram and on Threads.
And you can follow me out there on the socials at Wrestling Realist. That is at WrestlingRealist. You can catch me every Monday, Tuesday, and occasional Wednesday on the Chairshot Radio Network. Mondays talking wrestling, or Mondays talking nerdy stuff with these guys. I don't ever talk wrestling, I guess, anymore. Like, it just never happens. Tuesdays talking sports on the Four Corners Podcast, and Wednesdays, when Greg DeMarco and I schedules allow it, to talk wrestling on the Greg DeMarco Show. I lied to y'all last week. I thought it was going to happen, and then it didn't happen. It made me sad. Oh, I just got a notification. Updates.
Wow. This Miami-New England game is insane. The Dolphins just returned a punt for a touchdown. The Patriots returned the kickoff for a touchdown around the very
two
next.
Two terrible teams trying to show that they are more terrible than the other. And that sounds like a good time to call it on this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Now get yourself out of the basement, get some sun, and light a candle for one injured Henry Cavill. David needs you to support him. This is
We Do
Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
Hey, Coach.
Hey, Nigel. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
How are you?
Good. Good.
Great.
This is the leg?
I thought you told me he was solid muscle.
Well, he's much stronger than he looks.
I'm wiry.
Go get some kicks in.
He's wiry.
Wiry.